TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
What a cool experience.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets. A division of Bell Media. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us wherever you may be throughout the universe, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock. And we have no idea where Ezzy Ginsberg is.
No, we know where Ezzy is.
Oh, hi, Ez. There you are.
Ezzy is here today. He came early with a coffee. However, as we started the show, Ezra looked around and says, "Where are my headphones?" And
you shouldn't be using that mic. You should be using that mic.
You also don't have a mic cover, Ezzy.
Yeah, you need a mic cover on it. So Richard and I will start this off, sure. And we'll get to Ezzy in a couple minutes. But you're on time, so that's a good good step in the right direction there. We appreciate that there, Ezzy. Jam-packed 3 hours coming to you this Saturday morning, bright and early, with a special start time. Of course, Jets afternoon game, so we start bright and early. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time, Jason Ferris is going to join us. He wrote a fantastic book about what it's like. He spent traveled 60,000 kilometers, gathered about 150 hours worth of interviews, met with pretty much general managers, current, old, future, anybody in the game of hockey, and really got deep inside what it's like, the world of the NHL general manager. So we're going to talk to Jason about that coming up in about 30 minutes' time. You're playing with my mic, Ezzy, not yours. That was my mic completely.
Okay, I've got headphones. I'm back in the game here, Drew.
Yeah.
Can you not hear now?
I can hear. You just turned my headphones up, so now I'm going to go deaf by the time the show is over.
Well, I know that you forgot your hearing aid at home, so I decided to turn your...
Appreciate that. 9 o'clock this morning. He's the New Jersey Devils play-by-play guy on radio on WFAN. He is Matt Lachlan. He's going to join us. He's been on a few times this year already. He's a terrific guest. Great insight into the Devils. Matt Lachlan's going to join us at 9 o'clock. 9:45. Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Most people won't know this unless they're really diehard, but the St. Louis Blues are right up at the top of the NHL in terms of points. Which is amazing because they got off to a slow start. They fired Davis Payne. They hired Ken Hitchcock. We'll talk to Jeremy about the resurgent St. Louis Blues. Coming up at 10 o'clock, there was a big trade this week in the NHL. Mike Camilleri went from Montreal to Calgary. And Calgary sent Rene Bourque to Montreal, plus some other fodder and pieces. 10 o'clock, we're going to really get into that trade. We're going to start with George Johnson of the Calgary Herald. Then 10:15, Sean Gordon of the Globe and Mail in Montreal. So we have that trade covered in its entirety. Jam-packed show, like I said. Your tweets at Illegal Curve. You can send us some emails, info@illegalcurve.com. And, best tweets or best email, we'll definitely give them some new Illegal Curve toques, the new Illegal Curve merchandise. And, of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't say the new Illegal Curve hats are available at City Hall.
Once again, I forgot the memo. You've both got your IC hats on right now. And I'm rocking the original Illegal Curve toque. Just like Timmy is.
Yeah.
And you didn't tell me I was supposed to wear my new hat.
$59.50, not just any hat.
That's right. It's an official New Era $59.50 hat.
I actually got the $69.50. Dave Manuk hooked me up with the $69.50. It's a step above.
Sure that's one of the things you're not allowed to, one of George Carlin's things you're not allowed to say on radio. But that's okay. We'll deal with that later. Anyways, they're fantastic, brand new Era 5950 hats.
Great
available hat. At City Hall. You can, if you want to take a picture of it.
On Cordon, not actual City Hall.
City Hall on Cordon Avenue. Exactly right.
Sam Cates isn't outside City Hall selling the hats.
City Hall, 823 Cordon Avenue is where you can get those hats. And they're terrific if you're looking for a little post-Christmas
Don't worry about the guy that works there, but...
I'm not going to touch that one either. Let's look back at last night in the NHL before we look ahead to today in the NHL. Five games last night on the ice. First game that really matters to Winnipeg fans. So there's a couple games that matter to Winnipeg fans as it relates to Southeast Division standings. Let's start in Washington, where the Washington Capitals, on home ice, they defended their turf on the back of a Troy Brower hat trick.
Yeah, they're getting going, Drew.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised at all. But Washington beat Tampa 4-3 last night.
Not surprised by the talent.
that they're getting going. I'm a little surprised by what we've seen when we've when we've seen them in person. The Jets played them, but yeah, Drew, they're getting going. They handle the Lightning, who've had just a brutal season. If you watched the highlights of that game last night, which I did on a couple occasions, Brouwer did get his hat trick, you know, the empty netter at the end of the game to top it off. But Dwayne Rolison, dear God, like,
yep.
It's, I mean, he's letting in goals. He looks like he's 60 years old. And the question is, if you're a Tampa Bay fan and you're sitting at, you know,
17-22-4
at 38 points right now, do you call it a day and celebrate?
Well, that's it's hard to believe that they're going to be able to come back and leap over all that many teams to get into the playoffs.
Isn't it? I mean, they're minus 32 goal differential, which is the worst in the Eastern Conference. It may actually, no, it's the worst in the Eastern Conference. You know, they've never been a great team in terms of defense. Their offense has been okay overall. I have to check to make sure that, I mean, from what I remember. But in any event, Drew, it's, I mean, Ezzy, I think this is a, I think this might be a tap. We called for them to regress, but I still thought they would make the playoffs, just, you know, lower down.
Yep. Yeah.
This is an awful season, and I think the shine has already worn off on Guy Boucher.
I think we all kind of agreed they were going to regress, because some people were even picking the Tampa Bay Lightning to be a Eastern Conference finalist again. So I mean, this is a huge surprise to me. It you kind of nailed it, Richie. I mean, Rolison's been bad. If there's anybody that's shown their age more than Brodeur, it's Rolison. He's been out of position, and this is finally the year that, you know, he's breaking down, and it's clear that Garon needs to play more.
And even then, as he, like, I mean, you mentioned Garon. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's nothing to write home about either. I mean,
he's a bona fide NHL backup.
The Bolts are 13th in the league in goals per game, so I mean, respectable. Certainly respectable.
They're scoring
30th in the league in goals against, 3.42. goals per game against
Tampa Bay. I mean, you mentioned, should they definitely, Yzerman's definitely considering them as sellers right now, because I think you're out of your mind if you think this team's making the playoffs this year. They're out of it, let's be honest. And
it's not a rebuild in Tampa by any stretch.
Well, no, it's not a rebuild, but
it's a retool.
It's a retool.
Yeah,
sure,
that's a good word.
And how often do those work? But this is the question I have.
Calgary's still going through theirs.
We'll talk about that later. But Drew, I mean, Lecavi is getting, I mean, for all the young talent, and meaning Stamkos and Hedman, in reality, they're actually, I would guess that they're probably a top 10 in terms of age in the oldest team.
How old's Marty St. Louis?
That's what I'm talking about. I think he's 36 or 37.
I was going to say that.
And then Lecavi is getting up there. He's lost a half a step, if not a full step, probably half a step.
Rolson brings you up 10 years just by
itself. So as you think about that, I mean, you're wasting another one of those years that St. Louis is being able to perform. But before he's 40, Lecavi is getting a year older. I mean, your defense isn't anything to really write home about. You have a fair amount of veterans there. You just locked up Brouwer. And this team is starting to go from trending upwards. They've obviously trended downwards recently. Yep. Now the question is, moving forward, are they one of the teams who is, exactly as you mentioned, doesn't know what they are, and they're always middling?
And middling is almost as worse than you know, the alternative. If you tank... Well, you know, tanking leads you to be
Chicago,
power.
Chicago, Pittsburgh, Edmonton.
Yeah, these are teams that are going to be powers for the next decade.
Washington. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, tanking's not so bad, but I mean, this Washington is now 2 points behind Florida for the Southeast Division lead. They're 6-3-1 in their last 10, whereas Florida's 3-5-2 in their last 10.
Florida's not very good. So.
No, this is Washington's division to win.
Yeah,
it still is.
Yeah.
And let's talk about Florida. They on home ice against a AHL quality Pittsburgh lineup without Malkin.
No.
I mean,
Malkin played.
Only
Crosby and Staal, Drew. I mean, that team is still a good team.
I thought James Neal was out a month.
No, he came back.
He's been back for two games.
I apologize.
He was terrific last night.
We should clarify that. It was a false report, but there was a report that he was going to be out 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And it turned out, I think he missed one or two games only.
I apologize in that case.
Well, no, but it was a false report.
Was there yesterday. He was back. He played, I mean, he hit two posts, I believe. He played a very dominant game. The Penguins were going to lose another game in a row. I believe that would have been seven. So you're talking about a team that I know they've been struggling, and we're going to talk later about the whole Crosby drama.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking more so about the reaction to his concussion than his concussion itself. But we'll touch on both topics, Drew. But I think that Pittsburgh's a team that really, they play their system really well. They get back healthy. I really have no concerns about them. Florida's a team, you know, you watch them now and they were tearing it up, obviously, early. And there's talk about Kevin Dineen for Coach of the Year. I think that will slowly dissipate.
Yep.
I think their goaltending, once again, if you watch last night's highlights and if you watch them play, which I have numerous occasions, their goaltending is awful.
Yeah.
And that's what it was supposed to be. And some of these guys, you know, Clemenson and Theodore, you know, playing up above their heads a bit.
I think Markstrom's now injured.
Markstrom's hurt. Yeah. So you really have, I mean, these are...
It's Washington's division to win, and I would not be surprised if Washington ran away with this division.
I wouldn't be surprised if they won it by 6 points or more.
Yeah. Drew, I know you want to move on. I just want to quickly say that going into this game, Pittsburgh had lost six in a row, so this is you can't understate how huge this win is for them.
Yeah.
Because this has easily been their worst stretch, I think, in years.
It's been panic there.
I think everyone here saw before the game, during the practice, everyone came out and put a C on their
chest.
I know you
want to
talk about it. I just think that, if, like Richie said, if they get healthy, they get Letang back, they're going to make the playoffs for sure, and they could even go a little bit far, even without Crosby. And you throw in Crosby in there, and then it's sky's the limit.
If Pittsburgh keeps their head above water over the next little bit when they have these injuries,
and you get back Letang, Staal, and Crosby, a whole new ball game.
That's right. That's a hell of a trade deadline.
Maybe the favorite.
I don't know if there's a tighter team in the NHL. Like, those guys are a really, really tight unit, and I mean, you saw that with the way they stood up for Crosby
in Columbus last night. Congratulations. They won a game in regulation. That doesn't happen every day.
Yep.
I think this is their seventh or so in the last calendar year.
No, seventh win in the history of the franchise.
It might be that, too. Columbus 4, Phoenix 3 last night in a game attended by Ali Kay.
Yes, a 50-50.
Special shout out to Ali Kay.
$2,000 or something?
Something like that. The 50-50 was about $2,000.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Drew, it's hard.
What?
It's hard when you're in Columbus and the season's a write-off, and you don't know if the coach is going to be lasting after the year. You don't know if somebody's going to be moved. Give them credit for playing hard against a team that's, you know, that Phoenix team that's more than respectable. I mean, nobody's talked about the fact that Radim Vrbata has over 20 goals already this year.
Yep. Yeah.
That pays for like 40 goals. Where'd that come from?
Your guess is as good as mine.
You know what? He wasn't bad last year either.
No, he was like a 20.
I can't believe that a Phoenix team is going to score 40 goals. I think that's sacrosanct to Dave Tippett's style.
Drew, it's a good word, sacrosanct.
Thank you. In Buffalo last night, in what is often a home game for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And it seemed like it last night. I watched that game. It seemed like it. I mean, I know the Leafs fans are usually raid there, but it was had to be half.
Oh, yeah.
Leafs stuff. And by the way, I'm of the belief, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the actual fans that can't afford tickets buy tickets to these games and go
down. Absolutely.
They're a hell of a lot louder than the 18,000 quote-unquote fans at the both 18,000 quote-unquote and fans quote-unquote that attend Canada Center.
And I know
that's
that
a lot of quote-unquotes.
I know that many, well, quote, oh, end quote, I think this is going to be hopefully a similar type of thing that we'll be able to see in Winnipeg, even though Minneapolis is a little bit further. It's a little bit different situation.
But I think, well, you're not going to see that many.
I said that, though. I'm just saying that I think Winnipeg is close enough to Minneapolis that I'm just trying to say that you could see a lot of Winnipeggers going down to Minneapolis to enjoy the Wild game. That's all
this
I'm saying.
It's an hour apart, though.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
By the way.
I said that. You guys aren't listening to what I'm saying.
We're listening.
It was still a poor comparison.
Yeah, we're listening to it. We're just completely and totally discrediting it before you even finish saying it is what we're doing.
Right. I'll drive to Minneapolis by myself.
You do that.
I mean hitchhike.
Buffalo won 3-2 is the point of that. They beat Toronto. Toronto had a 2-0 lead in that game, I believe.
No, Toronto was down 2-0.
Toronto was down 2-0? Sorry.
And Grabowski was...
It's hard to watch while I'm curling at the
same
time.
You're watching too much of the Republican race, and I don't like it. Yeah. Get your dial off of CNN. Start watching
TSN.
Take
your mitts off, and let's get going here.
Okay.
You know what? Gustafsson last night wasn't great. And I think
especially on the Gostad goal.
Well, that was a brutal goal. It was Gostad down the right side, wrist shot, and Gustafsson just kind of flung his body at it.
Yep.
You know, you're playing the Sabres team that right now is on the rocks a bit. If you're the Leafs and you come back and you tie it 2-2, it's a game you really got to have.
Yeah.
And they didn't have last night, and Kessel and Leupold didn't get on the board again. That was the second consecutive game for the first time all year. So interesting how much they rely on those two guys. And
Well, Richie, you know that on TSN and everywhere, I watched the highlights and I watched the game and then I watched some of the recaps and everyone already knew that. And I mean, that's in a nutshell the problem with the Leafs is going to be whether they're going to make the playoffs. Their secondary scoring is suspect. Grabowski's been pretty good lately, but it's the Kupel, Leupold and Kessel show. I said Kupel. It's those guys are both all stars.
I'm just glad you didn't say Kugel.
But it's I could go for some Kugel right now.
I'm just glad you're here right now.
Yeah, but I mean, that's going to be the problem going forward, and the goaltending. I mean, Gustafsson has been unbelievable over the last few weeks, but last night he fell asleep.
Doesn't look good doing it though. You know, the goalie who plays really well doesn't look that good doing it.
Yeah, why did he get the name Monster? Because he's not at all.
That was before he played in the NHL. He got that coming over from Sweden.
So maybe we should look at not bringing nicknames over from different leagues. Maybe you should get a new nickname.
Well, it's like when we came over here, I didn't take my nickname from our previous
home. You were the Bear. Now you're Universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Drew the Universe Mandel.
I'm Universe now?
Yeah, because you start the show off. It makes perfect sense. Ilya Bryzgalov, who went on his universe thing. Right? And I'm not saying you're like Ilya Bryzgalov, but I'm just saying they call him Universe.
I think you're more like Ilya Bryzgalov.
No, but they call him Universe on the Flyers now, if you've watched 24/7.
I have.
And your intro is, hello, Winnipeg, hello, Manitoba, hello, good morning, Winnipeg, good morning, Manitoba, good morning, Universe.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes sense. Let's get some feedback on this from
our fans.
Once
again, we're just happy that you're here.
Well, people don't know that I'm actually speaking via Skype.
Although that happiness is slowly dissipating.
Our final game last night in Edmonton, the Anaheim Ducks really just beat up on the Oilers on home ice. 5-0 Ducks over Oilers.
Happy Bowling terrible in that game.
Yep. It was his birthday.
Yeah, well, he's terrible anyways. He's
it was 30. His birthday. Happy birthday, Abby.
But
former Jet.
You know, I think that... We talked about it last week about it'd be crazy to trade Getzlaff.
Yeah.
4 assists last night. A couple of beauties. He had a beauty assist on a weak goal that Ryan scored, but still a beauty play. He had a beautiful assist to Corey Perry.
Yeah.
Tamas Lainen had 2 kind of bank-in goals, fluke goals. But now that team needs – it's easy. Again, if you have to add something in the offseason, it's a lot easier to add secondary scoring than it is to add superstars.
Richie, when you look at that game and the Ducks – are below the Oilers in the standings. They beat them 5-0. Perry, Getzlaff, Ryan, Solani, all these guys, they're all actually not having, they're not even terrible years. They're having off years for sure, with the exception of Solani.
Well, look at
you look at the guys on their team, you're wondering, how is this one of the worst teams in the West? And it's because they have no secondary scoring and their goaltending has been bad this year.
Yeah, their defense hasn't been great. And you know what, guys, we haven't talked about it at all, but it was written about this week. You know, Tambellini and Rennie, I don't think their contracts run past this year, and there's some question as to whether or not they'll be renewed.
Well, we can. We'll certainly monitor that situation going forward. Let's go to break. When we come back on the other,
you know, Steve Tambellini's done a great job having them finish 30th every year.
I know you don't like him. When we come back on the other side, we're going to look ahead to the Winnipeg Jets this week. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
An Ezzy Award.
Yeah.
I don't know. He did say that you were his favorite person and I deserved a key to the city on the year-end wrap-up on TSN 1290.
I was reading Twitter the other night, and we're going to talk about that in another aspect as well. I was reading Twitter the other night. I believe it was Melissa Martin from the Free Press. She said, I'm just glad to have won an Ezzy.
Did Gary ever win an Ezzy?
Gary did win an Ezzy. If you look back to my Twitter account, and I did do this at the end of the year.
Yeah,
before we took over for the big show.
The by the way, the Ezzies might be the proof somebody needed to just take you straight to the mental award.
Well, no. I mean, it's proof that I need a girlfriend, to be honest with you. I put together the Ezzies kind of. I had some spare time on my hands.
Mm.
I've been busy lately, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to put together some Twitter awards and just go nuts. And some of them, it kind of did. Someone actually, I think it was Richie or Hart, our friend Hart, Jacob, told me just to keep going. And I kind of started off as just a bit of a joke, and then I kind of did it for a couple hours. And Gary,
a couple hours. I know how long it was.
Gary did win sports writer of the year. And I also gave...
I'll tell you what, there's a fastball coming right down the heart of the plate right now that I'm just going to let it pass by me.
I gave Hustler one at Hustlerama one as well. I forget what it was because I gave out like 100 of them. So, but I did give Gary one. So, Gary, you did get an Ezzy. I love you, and I do hope that two-way street becomes... that one-way street becomes a two-way street, and hopefully I can meet you somewhere in the middle.
That was well said. It was a little odd, but it was well said.
Well, Gary, I don't know if we played that part of the audio, but he goes...
We know. It doesn't matter. Leave it there. Right. This is a huge key week for the Jets coming up. They have 5 games this week.
It's a huge month coming up.
Well, yeah, I know that, but we're starting with the week.
We're already in the month.
From this Saturday to next Saturday, they have 5 games. Obviously, tonight against New Jersey.
3 games and 4 nights coming up.
That's right. Monday, Tuesday, the back-to-back. Monday in Ottawa. Tuesday, again in New Jersey.
You used to live in Ottawa.
That's true. Thursday, they're home to Buffalo. And then next Saturday, they're home to Florida. You know, they're obviously 1-4 in their last 5 since New Year's.
Yep.
You know, is this team trending downward going forward?
Right now?
Well, going next 5 games in this week, what do you think the record's going to be?
Jersey, Ottawa, Jersey, Buffalo, Florida.
Yeah,
I mean that's not that hard of a schedule.
It's not a tremendously hard schedule.
It's all the teams around you. I mean, you have 3 home games and 2 road games.
That's
you
right.
You have to go. Ideally, what you want to do is what you want to go. You obviously want to win every game, but you want 2-1 at home and 1-1 on the road, .500 on the road. If you go 3 out of 5 here and you get 6 points out of 10. I think you're fine with that.
If you don't, I think then that's not good enough. I mean, the road trip, let's be honest, that road trip was awful. And there was 2 games there that the Jets did not deserve to win against the Leafs and the Habs. They didn't deserve to get any points. They did deserve to get some points against Boston.
If you fall asleep in the third, do you deserve to get the points? That's the question.
No, you don't. They played well. They played the best game on the road trip against a very good team.
Would we agree that they had a chance?
Sure.
Whereas the other 2 games that they lost, they didn't.
And the problem, though, is we mentioned Buffalo, where they
won. They gave themselves a chance.
Buffalo, where they won, they played a good game. They still gave the team a point who's chasing them. So you got to get some clean wins here. It's been five games.
Yeah.
And they're trending down. Well, I don't think it's a question. They are trending downward. But they have to get it going, and to make, I mean, the schedule over the next 5 games isn't that difficult.
Nope.
But then when you look at, we've got the All-Star break coming up, and the Jets have a couple of, I think, two or three road games right before the All-Star break, and then 3 afterwards.
That's right. I think they're on the road for about 7 games in a row.
But they do have a little bit of a break, so it's not a pure road trip in that sense, that they get to do whatever they want during the All-Star game. Buffalo will obviously be going to the All-Star game. It's a tough stretch. 11 out of their next 14 games on the road. And I think when you look at the 2 games that they've played against the Devils before, I wrote about this in my preview for LegalCurve.com.
Mm-hmm.
The last time the Jets played the Devils, they played at home, which was early December, which started off their good run. They had a good game. It was a clean win. They won 4-2, and it was that was the game that Mark Stewart got that winning goal, and Evander Kane had 2 goals, and they played well. But the Devils are also a team that's playing very well, and today's game, it's an afternoon game, obviously, it's going to be a challenge, and then you're going to play the Devils again on Tuesday night. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they could easily take this game here.
I think you're on the right track there. I think you look at the Eastern Conference now and you say to yourself, there's a kind of a gap here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after Buffalo, Montreal, Tampa, Carolina, and Islanders, to me, they're all done. So, not mathematically, obviously, but to me, they're all done. Yep. So, in reality, I mean, Winnipeg is fighting with Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Toronto, you know, even Ottawa, you can extend it.
Washington's not going to be that low.
Washington or then Florida, right? So all those teams, lots of the teams you need. So when you talk about Jersey, that's 2 games with Jersey, 1 game with Ottawa, 1 game with Buffalo, and 1 game with Florida. All those teams are teams they're going to be fighting with.
You don't beat those teams coming up, Drew. You're not going to make the playoffs. You're going to look back and you're going to say we just lost 6 points in those 3 games.
Oh yeah, you go 1-4 here.
You're done.
See you later.
Especially because I mean that New Jersey game. The second New Jersey plays tonight in Winnipeg, and then they're off until Tuesday at home.
And Winnipeg, they've been off. They've been off for 2 days already.
That's right. They've been in Winnipeg since, I think, Wednesday night or early Thursday.
Right after the Edmonton game.
Yeah, they've been here for a while. They've been enjoying the lovely weather. To the Jets' advantage, they all might have the flu now.
Maybe it's good because the playoffs aren't actually that far away. The Jets have to get desperate. I mean, it's not enough to play like they played the last game. I mean, they had a poor effort, and I mean, when they were down in the third period, they didn't have a shot for the first 10 minutes. You got to play with more intensity
at
home.
Yeah, that's true. And then intensity is true, but I think sometimes we'll do the post game interviews and post the audio on LegalCurve.com. You're into the dressing rooms, and you know, one team we did this, and the other team we didn't do this. Their performances certainly aren't mutually exclusive. I think what happens is, the Jets played against San Jose, and San Jose is a superior team. San Jose was ready to go. They played a tremendous game in terms of a system. They didn't.
Yep.
Everybody was where they're supposed to be defensively. They communicated. They played a strong game. And the Jets, sure, they didn't have the quote unquote intensity. They didn't do this and that, but they didn't do that because San Jose wouldn't let them.
Even if the Jets played the Jets have to, if San Jose's playing at the level, you know, an average level for them.
And that was above average, like,
yeah. And they played, so above average. So if the San Jose's, so let's say San Jose plays that way, continues to play that way, above average.
Jets can't beat them.
The Jets can't beat them.
No.
There's just something about, I mean, at some point in time, the talent disparity wins out.
You could make an argument even though that game was only 2-0.
They weren't competitive in the entire game.
You know what game people might say was the most dominating loss was maybe the Detroit game? Will you give me that?
Yeah, no argument.
So that game I thought might have even been more dominant because, see, this is why Richie's a very smart guy, because he's right. Even though they didn't win 7-1 like Detroit beat the Jets, it was like that. The Jets couldn't do anything.
No. They killed
this. This was the prototypical game where it was just shots from the outside, individual.
That's right.
I mean, you got Dan Boyle, Brent Burns, Douglas Murray, very good defenseman.
That team is good.
Yeah,
and you know what, Ezzy? Let me quickly jump in there because San Jose, if you were going to beat San Jose, the one weakness on their team right now, excuse me, is their third and fourth lines.
Yep.
And they got a goal from
Brad Winchester.
That's exactly right. Yep. And if you're the Jets, you have to get that line can't score because you shut down the Thornton line. That line can't score.
Right.
And they did.
It just boils down to sometimes the more talented team.
By the way, Burmese Shrub was just brutal in that game.
Brutal. Defensively. Well, we'll talk about the line matchups because they were a little bit bizarre. Because why do you break up? Like you said,
he was coming in rusty though. He'd missed a few games.
No, I'm not talking about Burmese Shrub so much. But why do you break up the line? Kane, been, Little, and Wheeler. The line that's been carrying you for the last month.
Kane's in the doghouse, I guess.
Well, no, I don't think he is. By the way,
another issue quickly, I might as well air all our grievances, it is Festivus. Claude Noel's gonna not blame the media for speaking out against Evander Kane.
Well, we're gonna go through that article. We have the direct quotes. We're gonna talk about that later on in the show. We have to go to break because we have Jason Ferris right away. So let's go to break. We'll talk about that. There's a lot to talk about in the Jets land. Things are not hunky dory by any stretch.
There's no joy in Joyland.
There is no joy in Joyland. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 12.9. Welcome back to the program. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Jets Devils gets underway at 2 o'clock with the puck drop. 1 o'clock, Rick Ralph has the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome to the program Jason Ferris, the author of Behind the Moves, How NHL General Managers Build Winners. It's a part encyclopedia, it's a part history book, and it's a part manual for would-be managers. Jason, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Good to be here, guys.
Jason, let's start. I mean, this is not very many books can be described as a tome, but I would describe this as a tome. The effort you put in, the travel, the hours and hours and hours of interviews. Let's start the first question. What prompted you to put this book together?
Well, you're right. It's a tome. It's an oversized coffee table book. It's 152 pages, and it is packed information. Every living general manager who's taken a team to the Cup Finals was a part of making of this. And it's sold in limited edition, signed and numbered by the NHL GMs themselves. It's a pretty unique thing. I guess, the idea for the book really came from my desire to kind of marry my two interests. One of general manager, having been an executive at a number of companies myself, and of course my life interest and passion for hockey. And it's always my belief that, most of us in Canada grow up wanting to play in the NHL. And when that dream dies, and many of us, that dream dies early, as it did for me, the next thing to turn our attention to is building and
Jason,
in NHL GMs.
Okay, I think you were cutting out a bit, but I think you're okay now.
Okay, sorry about that.
No worries.
Jason, you talked... go ahead.
Well, I think that fascination is there, but really so little is known about NHL GMs beyond, point-in-time interviews about sort of headshots in the NHL or some specific issue. There's not a lot where they get to talk about their long-term perspective, and there's not a lot about them being able to explain what it's like to deal within the community of GMs with all the other personalities.
Jason, you talked to quite a few general managers. Who's the most interesting to you? And if that's too singular or whatever, give us a few guys that you found the most interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely too singular. They're all fascinating guys, and they got to the job because of a reason. And none of them are there by a fluke. But, you know, there's some guys, and I got to talk with, as I say, there's 35 GMs living who have taken a team to Cup final. So all of them were intimately involved. So it sounds really 50 years of general management history. So, you know, a guy like Serge Savard, who's been out of the game for a while, is fascinating. And what he learned as a player and how he applied that.
Jason, you're cutting out on us. We're going to give you a call back in a second. We're going to give you a call back, maybe get a better connection going. So hang tight. Our producer will give you a call back in a second.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Well, that's Jason Ferris. You'll hear from him again in a second.
Yeah. Well, maybe
I didn't
ask,
even make that up. You're like, I was like, Morse code. Right.
We'll ask him that question again because his answer, he was cutting up.
Yeah, exactly. Lousy technology. Remus is on the job, though. Yeah. Don't worry about
it. Well, that's fine. We'll call
him back. But it's not your standard novel. It's not a book that you would sit and read. It's a coffee table book.
It's not a coffee table book about coffee tables.
No, exactly. It's a coffee table. It's got beautiful artwork in it.
It seems like it's similar
statistics
kind of to the idea of Randy Turner's.
Yes, very similar.
Book,
exactly.
Back to the Bigs. Yeah.
Back to the Bigs.
Great. I haven't read it. I certainly suggest that you do, but it seems like it's similar to that. You know, it's a big book, but I mean, it's a book. It's a cocktail book, but it's a book.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, the stories I'm sure these guys have are just outstanding.
And from all accounts that I'm hearing, it's a book that's a game changer, really.
Apparently, there's one about Bob Gainey getting into it with Serge Savard.
Yeah, Tim, can we take an early break and then come back with Jason? Okay, we'll take a quick break. Remus is calling Jason again. We'll get him back on a better landline. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. I believe we've reconnected with Jason on a better connection. Jason, are you there?
I'm here. Sorry about that, guys.
No worries. Lousy iPhones, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Jason, we thought that the iPhone was a superior technological device than the BlackBerry. Maybe that's false.
I tell you, it's not working for me. I'm back to my BlackBerry.
No, we're BlackBerry guys in this room, so you're in good company. Let's continue where we left off. Ezzy was asking you about the most interesting general managers that you met with, if you had any that jumped out to mind, or really just how it was sort of interacting with them in general.
Sure, and hopefully you heard, Serge Savard was somebody that definitely would be on that list of interesting guys. You know, maybe some GMs that aren't front and center in people's mind to mention, guys like a Pierre Lacroix in Colorado. Interesting because he really built a brand in Colorado, and so he's a business guy as well as a hockey guy, and he's also interesting, and he details quite a bit his strategy of what he calls sort of putting the pieces together, the ingredients together of his team, and then how he added the spices along the way that made the team what it was. And so he kind of chronicles the various deals that he did that he called added those key spices, and whether it was a Claude Lemieux or a Patrick Roy or, bringing in the coach, the key things that put them over the top. Certainly, someone like Lou Lamoriello, who is very guarded and not well known in terms of, what he actually does in that bunker in New Jersey, a fascinating guy. He spent a lot of time with me, and ultimately, every time I see him, he keeps saying, I can't believe that I actually did that interview over those times, because I don't talk about what I do to anybody. But, what he shared and what's in the book is some fascinating things for people that are in any walk of business life. He goes through kind of his postseason self-analysis that he does on himself, the questions that he sits down and asks himself, and he talks the reader through that. It's really fascinating stuff to see how hard he is on himself, how hard he pushes himself, and many of the same things he asks, of course, his coaches and his players. So those are a couple of guys that were particularly interesting, but you could add Jim Rutherford and Emil Francis and certainly Glenn Sather and other guys like that to the mix as well.
Jason, is there a consistent trait that you noticed among GMs?
Well, I think they're all very smart guys, and with intelligence, and because many of them grew up in hockey locker rooms, they really test each other and they needle each other, and there's a lot of of tomfoolery and fun that goes on behind the scenes that none of the public ever gets to see. So that's kind of a fun piece. I think at core, the NHL GMs themselves are master managers of information. They spend their entire lives kind of getting to the GM chair, and through that time, they build networks of people all around the hockey world that feed them information. And ultimately, you know, it's, of course, player information and scouting and prospect information, but they need to really understand what's going on, or at least think they understand what's going on in each of the NHL dressing rooms around the league. And so they've got to have people well-placed, whether it's trainers or, you know, bird dogs or, you know, guys, you know, college coaches or whatnot that can have those ins to give them those reads when they're making deals. And then they've got to set up a network of information management in, within their own organizations to bring that information in, control it, and ultimately have it filter down to, for them to make decisions. So that's kind of a common thread for them. But you know, just a really good group of guys in general.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jason Ferris, author of Behind the Moves, NHL General Managers Tell How Winners Are Built. Jason, you know, you mentioned Lou Lamoriello being sort of reticent to, or he can't believe how much he spoke to you. You know, how was it sort of gaining their trust? You know, how, you know, the book you've written, I mean, the manual you've written is, you know, people would kill to have that opportunity to sit down with all these, you know, hockey geniuses. And, you know, how was it to, you know, get that opportunity to sit with them? You know, how did you sort of gain their trust? Did you have any sort of special moves, or just you, they saw your passion and went from there?
Well, I think you're right. I think the word trust is really key, because I didn't go through any NHL sources. I didn't certainly didn't go through the team PR and handlers and whatnot. I went direct to the GMs themselves. And this project wouldn't have worked if, you know, half of them said, well, no, I'm not interested. You know, so to have everybody actually be involved, be interviewed extensively. We did 120 hours of recorded interviews, and then, of course, countless hours of basically I lived with the GMs for 2 years. So it began by me approaching Brian Burke through a really good source, and he and I talked about what I wanted to do. And, you know, to Brian's credit, right away, I think he saw the value of telling the story and letting the GMs in their own words tell what it's like to be an NHL GM. Because this book is not me writing 252 pages about what I think about GMs. This is almost exclusively the words of the GMs themselves. And so once Brian was on board, you know, I did a lot of the background work with him over numbers of months. And then, you know, surgically kind of went out and began to be establish relationships with some of the more senior guys. And word started to get out about what was going on. And so it doesn't mean that, you know, guys like Glenn Sather were highly, highly reluctant. And it took a long time to kind of build his trust. But eventually, you know, I ended up spending a lot of time with him at his, you know, this summer cottage. And I've done that with lots of the other guys as well. So to try and, you know, gain their, build a long-term relationship with these guys and allow them to tell their perspectives on things in their own words.
Jason, you know, we don't usually get this kind of insight. You mentioned it, obviously. It's a unique experience for you to have this much access to general managers. But even maybe on a city-by-city basis, why don't you think general managers and maybe their backgrounds and are not examined at length?
Yeah. Well, I think that's an interesting question. I think, you know, many of these guys, first of all, there's been 174 GMs all time. And, you know, for most of them, only 5% get one chance. They never get another chance. So they get in the chair. And, you know, typically they'll be in a five-year contract. And, you know, that 5 years, once you're at the end of year two, all of a sudden you're now in the back end of that deal and the pressure, you know, mounts. So there's no rest for these guys, and there's an incredible amount of pressure. And so the last thing they're looking for is more people sort of inquiring and, you know, giving insight into what they're trying to do. They're trying to kind of, you know, manage, build relationships among the GM community and then manage for success. And that can be a very short-lived thing. So I think that's part of it, and I think many of these guys over their careers, whether they came up through the ranks as an agent or as a player or through management, have been burned by the press over the years, and so they're naturally guarded. And then in today's NHL, of course, it's so controlled by the media, and of course with TV and sound bites, you know, they never really get the opportunity to explain in long form what they're trying to do. And so this was a forum that allowed them to do that. And so the book is laid out where each GM has a double page spread, you know, with a mixture of their quotes about what their philosophy was and what they're trying to accomplish, but also the interactions they had with each of those other GMs around the table. So you really get to it's kind of that 360-degree look at the GM from his side and what the other GMs felt it was like to do deals with them over the course of their careers.
Jason, in the book, there's a section obviously on Glenn Sather. Can you sort of share with our audience, you know, what Glenn Sather was like as a general manager?
Yeah, and I think you know, Glenn's much maligned for what happened early on in New York, and it certainly seems that I think, as he said, it takes a long time to right a ship and an organization that maybe was built for short term success. And so it appears that they're on the right track now with a conference leading team. But Glenn, you know, he's somebody that I think really understood the psyche of players. You know, he was very close to his players, but he was always very good. And Kevin Lowe will tell you this: always very good at separating his managerial and his coaching hats from one another, and B, the personal and business side of what he had to do. So I think Glenn is, you know, he's the guy, if you ask any GM who was the first one that really tried to, you know, sell you a battleship or a bathtub for a battleship, it's Glenn Sather. And Jay Feaster has some great stories about when he first took over, and I guess Glenn figured he was a piece of raw meat, not having been an NHL GM before, and called him up and said, you know, that center you got down there, that Lecanier or whatever, he goes, oh, do you mean that Vincent Lecavalier? Oh, yeah, what are you going to do with that guy? I got a second rounder here that I thought he might, you know. So he's always testing guys, and in fact, he really tested me significantly. In terms of, you know, why the hell should I do an interview with you? Why should I sit down and spend time with you? I know why you want to spend time with me, but why should I spend time with you? And, you know, this went on and on for months. He and I danced back and forth. So he was testing me to see, you know, was I any good? What was I going to do with this information? And so he's a guy that's a tough negotiator. And the agents will tell you, Donnie Mina, who's out of Winnipeg, who was part of this, making of this book as well, will tell you, you can't do a deal with Glenn unless he gets the last little piece of the deal.
Jason, over the course of your research, have you found that owners have kind of changed their criteria necessary for a GM?
I think, I mean, you're hitting on an important area, and there's an area that we touch a lot on in the book, is the important interaction between ownership and a GM. In terms of changing their criteria, I mean, I guess the league has certainly evolved, and over the last certainly 30 or 40 years. And so the requirements of a GM are a lot different. It's no longer just the GM, a secretary, and a scout in the front office. It's, you know, these are complex organizations with, you know, far-flung management structures. So the criteria has changed in terms of them being able to manage a much larger staff, the GMs. It's changed because of the contractual and the CBA and all those kinds of things, the complexity of it. But at the end of the day, the GM's fundamental job is that of talent evaluation. And, you know, if you can't evaluate talent, you can be good at all the other pieces, but, you know, that's the key. So I think, you know, owners certainly will get sidetracked in their thinking, I think, in terms of when they bring a guy in and, you know, what the skills are. But, if they go too far wrong on the talent evaluation side, it's not going to work out no matter what they do.
I remember seeing Glenn Sather in the old Hockey Legends videos say that it gets back in, you know, when he started in the 80s, that the most important piece for a GM was to be able to do talent evaluation. It's interesting how the positions evolve so much, Jason. But our last question, and we'll leave you on this, you know, I think this is still a question that many, maybe some fans, maybe some insiders, probably more so outsiders, wonder, how much of an old boys club is it?
Well, it you know, 15 or 20 years ago and earlier, it was an old boys club. It would be called a fraternity, and because the GM staffs within a team were so small, their colleagues were each other. And so, you know, Pat Quinn in Vancouver and Bill Torrey in Long Island and Lou Nanny in Minnesota, et cetera, et cetera, those guys, their camaraderie was with their fellow GMs, and they worked very closely together. Their wives and whatnot were all very social. They golfed together many times a year, and the NHL under John Ziegler allowed them to be much more, you know, partners in what they were doing. Today, with 30 teams, with large staffs, the team GMs tend to be more inwardly focused within their own groups. And also with the CBA, there's a lot less movement of players. And so most of the kind of discussions are going on through the summer, not during the year. So I think there's a lot less of a fraternity. And also, you know, you see GMs now that aren't all former players. They're coming from the agent route and other routes. So there is less camaraderie, and it's sad to see, but that is kind of the way of the world. But that means that there's some great stories from the past in this book that people will love to hear about some of the shenanigans that went on between GMs, you know, when it was a little bit more of a close-knit society. So I'd encourage people that are interested, you know, the book is not available in stores. It is a unique kind of limited edition piece, and it's only available at NHLGMs.com. So if people are interested in finding out about it, it is selling quickly, and I think will sell out just given that it's limited edition. And so, you know, people can check it out online at NHLGMs.com.
That's exactly what I was going to have you say, Jason, is tell people where they can get their book. We know that we got our book from NHLGMs.com, and it's just a fabulous read. Jason Ferris, author of Behind the Moves, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. All the best with the book going forward.
Thanks for your interest, and good luck with the Jets in your market.
Hey, thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, Matt Lachlan from the New Jersey Devils, the radio play-by-play guy, is going to join us. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jets-Devils gets underway at 2 o'clock with puck drop with Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty. Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show is at 1 o'clock. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. And I've been reliably informed by David Minook that this morning's Winnipeg Jets morning papers are now posted at www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And we welcome back to the program the radio voice of the New Jersey Devils on WFAN. Matt Lachlan, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you enjoying our weather?
Through Richard and Ezra, I'm actually enjoying my stay here in Winnipeg. If it was maybe 10 degrees colder, not so, but it is winter, and a little dusting of snow last night looked beautiful. So having a great time.
Excellent. Hopefully. Glad to hear that. First things, can you confirm that it's going to be Marty Brodeur in net this afternoon for the Devils?
Yeah, Marty will be in goal tonight or today. That was the plan all along, that he would have started in Calgary and Johan Hedberg go in Edmonton. And they didn't switch from the plan, even though there was a little bump in the road on Tuesday from Marty's perspective.
Sounds good. Devils, after last year's, last year was sort of a disaster season for the Devils after the big acquisition of Kovalchuk and everything. This year, much better, sitting sixth in the Eastern Conference at the moment, 24-17-2, very, good record to start. The guy I want to start with is Patrick Elias, 40 points in 42 games. Sort of rejuvenating himself, is that the right word, or is it just sort of just continuing on where he's sort of, as we expect from him over past performance?
Well, maybe a little bit of both. He said yesterday after practice that he's felt as healthy as he has in the last several years, and if you go back from the lockout on, he contracted hepatitis while playing in Russia, and it took him a couple of years to get just physically fit, and then he had the captaincy stripped from him by Brent Sutter, and certainly that was a slap in the face. And then several coaching changes, and I think he added all up, and I think he was both physically and mentally drained a little bit. But hockey is fun again for the Devils. Winning does that. The second half of last season certainly resurrected everyone's hope that there was a foundation here that could move forward with some success. And Pete DeBoer has come in and just carried that further along. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit of the old Patrick, but I think it's a rejuvenated Patrick. He led the team in scoring last year, and he's in a battle for that spot now. And it certainly has been a key reason why the Devils have done as well as they have.
Yeah, we want to ask you about Zach Parise because obviously last year he missed most of the season with the ACL, MCL injury. And this year, especially as of late, you know, he's really started to bring it on. And he's almost at a point per game. And in my opinion, you know, he's having an underrated season as far as I'm concerned. You know, he should be in the... definitely in the Bill Masterton trophy discussion even this early as far as the what he's done coming back from knee surgery, which is very difficult. Has his upcoming UFA status, his contract status, is that a distraction at all, or is that something that you know, he doesn't think about? Have you been able to talk to him about that at all?
Oh, sure. We have spoken with him. Everyone has, especially once the calendar turned to January 1st, and he was and is able to negotiate with the Devils for a new contract. And so far, we've not seen any sign of, A, that happening, or, B, it being any sort of a distraction. As you mentioned, you know, he's just been flying out there the last 22 games. I'm just looking at some notes for today's game. He's got 27 points on 9 goals and 18 helpers. So, you know, his line with Adam Henrique and Ilya Kovalchuk has just been flying lately, the last month or so, and he is back to form. He did say earlier that while physically the knee was fine, just the idea of catching up to NHL speed took him a little while, and now he's back. You'll see today, anyone who sees the game today, either in person or watching it or listening on the radio, and the word picture has been created for them, we'll see the Zach Parise that they knew before the knee injury, digging pucks out of the corner, going hard to the net. He's on every loose puck like a hound. And that's what's made him one of the best players in the league, and he has shown that he is back at that level again.
You know, Matt, people are interested, obviously, in Winnipeg and hearing about Travis Zajac, and I guess kind of a two-part question. You know, maybe an update on him being shut down with the ACL soreness, and then I guess the second part of that question, just how good has Adam Henrique been filling the slot that many thought Zajac would eventually assume once he returned from injury?
Well, we'll answer the local angle first, and it is unfortunate that Travis has been unable to play in both games here in Winnipeg. It was something, obviously, that he circled when it was announced that the team was coming back here, or a team was coming back here, not B team. But at any rate, a team was returning, an NHL team was returning to the city. He was so excited about it. And then, of course, that gets derailed by the Achilles tendon injury. And then there was some hope as he recovered somewhat around the time frame that was listed that, okay, he missed the first one, he'll be here for the second, and he was juiced. But I guess the Achilles, listen, it's such a major tendon, it just, is taking him longer than anticipated. And the soreness that he was feeling there, I guess they just felt, he felt, only limited him to, you know, three-quarters of what he could do. And it was just best after consultation with the surgeon to shut it down. So, yeah, he's very disappointed. The Devils are poorer without him because he's such a critical player to their success and he plays such a critical spot. So, the Devils would be strengthened and will be strengthened when he comes back, but they would be even stronger now if he had played the whole season. That being said, if he plays the whole season, we may not have seen Adam Henrique at this point. And the opportunity was presented to him with Travis's injury. He didn't grab it right away. His camp wasn't the best. He got off to a slow start. He was sent down to the minors. An injury to Jacob Josephson, another young center in the organization, reopened that door, and boy, it's like Adam went to the A, and when he got a chance, he looked back and said, never again. Just not going back, because it's been night and day. And I make the argument that he is the team's MVP, simply because if he does not fill that spot, particularly with Josephson then going down, so the Devils were really soft in the middle there. Patrick Elias would have been their only one with any real experience. Well, if he doesn't fill that role, particularly between the players that he's playing with, Kovalchuk and Parise, no way the Devils are where they're at. So, yes, the numbers are good. Others have better numbers. But I think, in many ways, Adam Henrique is the MVP simply because they would be in big-time trouble trying to find someone to play between their two big guns.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Jets-Devils gets underway at 2 o'clock. Here on TSN 1290, we're joined by the voice of the New Jersey Devils, Matt Laughlin. Matt, when you click on the fancy little stat page on NHL.com and you click on the penalty killing percentage, right up at the top of the list there, New Jersey Devils, 90.4% success rate on the PK, the best in the NHL. Two-part question. How key has that been to their success this season? And second part, you know, what do they have in place on their PK that's making it so successful?
Well, you know, obviously they have struggled on the power play, so the penalty kill is even more important for them because they've not gotten much while with the man advantage, although lately it has been better, but their numbers overall won't reflect that, but it has been better lately. So when they weren't getting anything early on from the power play, they could still afford to allow the other team to score with the man advantage and win the specialty teams battle. So it was very, very important for the team to play as well as they have and continue to do so on the penalty kill. And the reason is they have skilled forwards playing the penalty killing role. You know, it's not the old days where you put out the quote-unquote, you know, third-line checking unit to be your PK guys.
John Madden and Jay Pandolfo, right?
Brilliantly when Jay Pandolfo and John Madden were helping them win Stanley Cups back in the early part of this century. But they have Zach Parise out there, Adam Henrique out there. They have Ilya Kovalchuk and Patrick Eliash out there. They have very good two-way performers. Kovalchuk more recently joining the penalty-killing unit. And Pete DeBoer is saying, listen, don't sit back and just prevent them from scoring. Put some pressure on the points. Take advantage of your speed. Take advantage of your offensive skills. And they've just taken that to heart because not only are they aggressive on the kill, obviously their offensive skills have led them to score as many shorthanded goals as they have. So while all the focus has been on how many the Devils have allowed while shorthanded, and they lead the league in that category, they also lead the league by a far margin in how many shorthanded goals they've scored. So it's really been good and fun to watch. And every team that they play against, and the Jets will be the same way today, are just a little on edge. And that's good, too. It takes their mind off of what their role is, which is, let's score a goal here. We got the man advantage. In the back of their head, the seed has been planted. Let's not be too casual here because these guys are aggressive. And that just takes a little bit away from the power play. And that's also helped the Devils, too.
Matt, how nice has it been for David Clarkson? He had a tough year last year, and you know he's getting a lot of goals this year. How nice has it been for the Devils to have Clarkson back playing some good hockey?
Yeah, another important reason for the rebound. He didn't see nearly as much ice time last year under Jacques Lemaire as he has this year under Pete DeBoer. He coached him in juniors at Kitchener, so there's a little bit of a relationship there. You know, that being said, that relationship would not be as strong if David did not contribute when given that extra time, but he has. So, yeah, the Devils, one of the strengths is the Devils have balance in scoring. They have seven guys with 10 or more goals. They have nobody with 20. They do have three guys in the top 25. Only Chicago has more with four. So the scoring doesn't jump out at you by one or two bright numbers, but if you look, they are very balanced. They're not the last in the league as they were last year in scoring. Pete DeBoer acknowledged they may not ever be first with this group, but they certainly could not be last. They're middle of the pack, a little better maybe at times. And, you know, David has played a big role, particularly on the power play. He's got 5 of his 15 goals on the power play. And, yeah, he's taken advantage of the time given to him. It's been a good relationship between the two.
Matt, you know, when people talk about the Devils, they talk, you know, the Devils are synonymous with trap and defensive style. I mean, at least from what I've seen of the Devils, I've seen them in person a couple of times this year and watched a fair amount of their games, the team seems more aggressive, especially on the forecheck, than, you know, people seem to give them credit for. Can you speak a bit about that?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned it because, you know, old labels do die hard, and that trap hockey, while all teams play it to a degree, but that trap hockey that in 1995, a long time ago, helped them to a championship, certainly went out the window. If you look at the numbers in 2000 and 2001 when they won and went to the finals, respectively, they had a lot of offense, led the team in offense. But, you know, that label has stuck, just like the swamp label has stuck. It was the headline in, and I forget whether it's Calgary or in Edmonton, but reference the team, you know, as like, you know, the swamp monsters are doing their thing. And we haven't been in the swamp now for 5 years. We've moved to a new building. But anyway, they do forecheck aggressively. You know, most coaches today, of course, recognize you've got to utilize your speed, get in there, force the team on its heels, puck possession, offensive zone time, all important. elements of any team, and the Devils have just taken their place. I don't know if they're the best at it, but certainly it is not the same team. It is not grab one goal and sit back and bore everyone to death. I mean, the Devils have given up some pretty big leads because of it, too, up 3-0 earlier this year in Florida to lose 4-3. Now, that doesn't happen often, but the way they play, they do expose themselves sometimes to a counterattack. So it's been a fun style of hockey. The players absolutely love it because the coach has given them the freedom to go. He's not reining in their offensive skills, and he just asks them to be responsible and get back and back check, and you'll see that on the Devils too. They do hustle back. They're a very strong back checking team. So yes, thank you for noticing that, because we've been carrying we've been carrying the torch of change for a little bit here, and people still want to think that it's just grab a one goal lead and everybody can go home, the blanket's been put on the fire.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. We're joined by Matt Lachlan, the radio voice of the New Jersey Devils. Matt, you can never tell for sure with Lou Lamoriello, but it seems as though they now have their coach of the future. Going forward, he seemed pretty settled with Peter DeBoer. Can you speak about the job that he's done with this team? And, it seems like they've really bought in and Lou Lamoriello's finally found his guy.
Well, I think you're right. Now, that being said, I think, if Lou was sitting on the panel or on another line, he'd say, yep, Pete's my guy, but it's about accomplishments here, and you've got to produce. But I don't think Pete's on any kind of a short leash at all, because he's done a really good job, and I think there's a commitment to the future here. And by that I mean, and I'll get back to your point about Pete, is that last year's season was such a disaster, not making the playoffs, dreadful start, one of the worst in NHL history. Great comeback that was exciting, but fell 12 points short, which is fairly significant, right, of a playoff berth. During the season, the team traded Jason Arnott and Jamie Langenbrunner. Colin White and Brian Ralston were traded or let go over the summer, and it enabled the team to transition to some of these younger players, whether it's Henrik given an opportunity, which took a while, but okay. Whether Adam Larson, they allow this 19-year-old kid to eat up so much time because they're starting to build for the future again, still with some veterans, still with the chance to get in the playoffs, and who knows what happens when you get there. But I think there's been a mindset change that the connection to the past has been broken to a degree, and now it's about the future. So all that being said, Lou goes out and gets this young coach who, while on the face of it, the last year or two of his three-year run in Florida wasn't that good, had a very good first year, many changes, lack of stability, three owners, three GMs, trading away the core, rebuilding constantly, and it was reflected in the record. So here comes a guy who was one of the it coaches in hockey, had paid his dues on the junior level, won a championship at Kitchener. Everyone thought he was the next guy that was going to take off and run, happened to be with a franchise that was in a state of flux, shall we say. Now he comes to a franchise that, yes, has made coaching changes, but there's one man in charge. It's Lou Lamoriello. He sets the structure, and, Pete DeBoer has certainly taken it and run with it. There have been some changes in Devils history that have raised eyebrows, but I don't think Pete's in any fear.
Yeah, we're about six weeks away from the NHL trade deadline, 6 or 7 weeks. What do you think Lou Lamoriello is looking to add or subtract at the NHL trade deadline?
At this point, I think he would be more guy who would add, and I think he'd probably not be alone in this. He would look for a guy who can help on the blue line, bring a little offense. That's the one area that, if you look at it, is lacking on the Devils' part. They have a solid team, but you're not going to get a lot of goals from them. And despite the changes that, Pete has encouraged in terms of offensive push, their makeup is such that they haven't scored in the past and they're probably not going to score much in the future. So if he could add that, a guy who could give some juice to the power play. Now, they went and got Curtis Foster a couple of months ago, and he has helped. He's part of the reason why it's better. But if they could get a guy who's more known for his scoring, I think that's some area that he would look to add to. A veteran forward, guy's been through the battles, would certainly not be unwelcome. But they're pretty good. They've got some pretty good scoring, and they're pretty settled there at their forward spots. I just think on the D line, a little more offense would be helpful.
Matt, I'll start the Ryan Getzlaf to New Jersey rumors for you, Ken.
Well, listen, I mean, you know, if Anaheim wants to give up a big power forward like that, there's going to be a lot of suitors. I just don't know what it would take, but yeah.
No, I'm not. I won't. Starting rumors is probably always a dangerous thing.
Well, they start somewhere, don't they?
Yeah. You know,
so why not here?
Exactly. Matt, before we let you go, we haven't spoken since we were in Jersey to see the last Jets-Devils game. I just want to confirm with you that they chant kill when they're on the power on the penalty kill to every team, and it's not something that the three of us should take personally.
No, don't take it personally, and yet they have not done it to every team.
Oh.
But we've also been on the road a lot after this one. The Devils go home for six straight, so maybe they'll just gain a little momentum and be part of the mantra. It's very soprano-like, though, isn't it?
Well, we're sitting there, we're enjoying the game, and all of a sudden the crowd is chanting, kill, kill. And I'm like, I can sort of understand why they would want it, but, you know, I thought it was a little bit of, you know, offensive for 15,000 to be chanting it at us.
Some of the best fans. Some of the best fans in hockey in New Jersey.
Yeah, that was a great. It's and just probably
awesome
the nicest
fans.
Arena. One of the just a, tremendous facility they have there in Jersey now.
Yeah, it is. It is really nice. And you know, it was funny. I was speaking with someone in Calgary the other day, and she's like, "Oh, we spent a couple of years in Jersey. Her husband's in the energy business, and they spent some time." She goes, "We lived out in the western part. Oh, it's so beautiful. People have the wrong idea." Yeah. Jersey gets a bad rap at times. It in many ways, it's a beautiful state. What you see when you land is not what the whole state's about. You know, that's the industrialized part of the coast. But, you know, Jersey Shore and Sopranos have given a bit of a black eye to the state, too. But it's great, and that building is fantastic. And spread the word, fellas, because, you know, hopefully we're going to be there for a long time.
This sounds like a good plan. Matt Laughlin, radio voice of the New Jersey Devils, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll see you at the arena in just a few hours.
You got it, guys. Thanks very much. Always a pleasure.
Thanks Matt. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to get deeper into Jets-Devils. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. In case you've missed any of the first two interviews, they and the entire show will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
Drew, I got to say, you did a great job of... We've got five guests today. We've already had two. You did a great job because... Jason Ferris.
Make sure that we're recording this. He's praising me. He's praising me.
I always praise you.
Usually you threaten to hit...
Oh, we put a little shtick on the air.
True or false, I think 3 weeks ago you threatened to break my laptop on the air.
Yeah, you guys were yelling at each other between breaks.
Yeah, we had a little moment, but we hugged it out off air, and we shared a sandwich, so we're all good. But you did a great job of booking the guests, pardon me. Jason Ferris was awesome. Matt Laughlin is unbelievable. I could talk
to him. Credit for my big salad.
I could take...
Richard did book Jason Ferris.
Okay, you booked Jason Ferris. Drew did book
all
the
other guests. Can I get a little love
here? No. No love for you.
Come on, Richie. I give you love 24 hours a day, even though that sounds kind of creepy. But
Nothing kind of about it. That was just definitely creepy.
Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.IllegalCurve.com.
One more thing. Hustler did win two Ezzy Awards. I want to clear the air here. He won two Ezzy Awards. Remus forwarded me the entire list. I don't know how he put this together unless he went through all of my tweets from a month ago.
I think he did.
But Hustler won Best Friendship of the Year with me.
Congratulations.
So that was a co-winner. And he also won another Ezzy for Hashtag of the Year, which was, I believe, either Pavlectricity or Cheetah Power Surge. It was at And That's No Bull from Cheetah Power Surge commercial. So Hustler is a double winner. Gary just won one, which obviously means I like Hustler better. So.
Naturally, of course. Head coach Claude Noel spoke with the media earlier this week in regards after the sort of the benching of Evander Kane, pardon me, in the Boston game.
Yeah.
Claude Noel spoke to the media, had some very interesting comments. Let's play that audio.
You know, like you have to remember that, and I have to remember that you get in emotions from the game, and, you know, you guys are very good at provoking emotions. That's what you do. And when you get caught, you pay the price. So that's something that I'll be ready for next time.
You know, interesting comments in that he seems to be trying to throw the blame at the media. And so far, he's sort of had a very buddy-buddy relationship with the media. And, I don't really care if somebody's criticizing the media. It doesn't make a big difference to me. I don't think his comments in this case were really justified or fair. I think the media did their role. They asked a question about why Evander Kane wasn't playing, and I think he took it. I thought he went a little bit not too far with his comments, but I thought it might be symptomatic that the pressure or the constant coverage of this team might be getting to him a little bit.
But I mean, Drew, I agree. And the reasoning behind that statement, I think I agree. The fact is, Drew, he's only doing scrums. He's not doing one-on-ones.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know why it's... And he's doing a couple 10 minutes a day. I mean, I don't think he's under that much pressure. He's under pressure, but I don't think he faces it on an hourly basis, really, from the media. It's a very controlled environment. I think what happened here is he made comments that he probably, from the media guidance that they have, whether they have experts on staff or they're outsourced, you know, they have people who they consult with, probably advise him against what he said after the fact. But I don't think the media has done anything here to exploit his emotions. I mean, the media's job is to ask questions about what they see and have him answer it. He can choose whether or not he wants to say something that is worth writing about or not. But I watched that scrum. It was in Boston, I believe, right? It was in Boston.
Yeah.
After the game, I was watching it on TSN Jets, and I forget who asked the question. But it was a valid question. You know, why was Kane sat down? And I want to talk about why he was in a second. Why he was sat down and why he was playing with Slater and Thorburn. Glass got hurt, but he was playing on the lower lines. That question, if you're watching the game and you're a writer, is a completely valid question. Nobody's playing on your emotions by asking you that question. It's a valid question. He gave a truthful answer. I know nobody likes to have to hear the truth these days and, you know, play it in the media and such, but Noel's used the media a fair amount over the past few months to try and get what his message across.
He used it to try and get his message across about Eric Fair just, you know, not 2 weeks ago.
Of course. So, you know, don't you can't suck and blow.
Yeah, it's certainly a give and take relationship. Yeah.
Yeah, and if we can pause for a second, then get back to Evander Kane and what lines he ended up. Mm-hmm. I think there's two things with Claude Noel. I think, and this is a similar situation to how the media basically created the story about Crosby. And Crosby said, this story wouldn't have come out if we were winning. And I agree with him. And I think Sidney Crosby is 100% right. I think that Claude Noel's a little bit frustrated, obviously, or not a little bit, very frustrated. The Jets are losing right now, and I think his frustration just could be coming out. And I think another point, Richie, and I think I know you well enough to think you'd agree with it. I think the media has been very gentle and soft with Noel.
I agree.
I think the fact that the Thrashers have come over from Winnipeg, there's been that transition, and I know that there's a debate amongst amongst us and other people whether the Jets will be a playoff team, and it remains to be seen. Obviously, there's still a good chunk of the season to go, but I think the media have treated him very respectfully, and I think Claude Noel would agree with that too. But I think as far as criticizing his moves and all that, I think the media has been pretty soft
when
on
you
it
bench when you bench your best player. When you bench your best player...
It's not the first time, Drew. He's benched him many times.
Yeah, he's benched him a couple times. When you bench your best player against the best team in the NHL, in my books, you're going to get asked about it. And nobody's exploiting emotions.
You're not asking about it as a member of the media.
You're not doing your job.
You're not doing your job. Right. So quickly, I want to get into... As an aside, quickly, I want to get into why I think he was benched. Because he hasn't explained it.
No. Which he doesn't really have to.
He doesn't have to. I'm not saying he has to. I'm just saying he hasn't explained it. From what I saw at the beginning of that game...
Mm-hmm.
Kane missed a few assignments, and by assignments, I mean he's not following the team's forechecking system, and he wasn't following.
He's freelancing too much.
He's freelancing a bit. So he, as the support winger in their neutral zone trap that essentially every team plays, Kane was way too far deep in the offensive zone, and he allowed the Bruins to make one pass, and they were in the neutral zone with basically no pressure all the way down the ice. And he came too wide, and I thought that was one miscue right away. It was on the second shift of the game, I believe. I think it was a shift after that. He was the first guy back, and a trailer started coming, and Kane wasn't skating, and the trailer beat him. The pass came through the seam from the left side to the right side. He didn't get to the guy, and the guy got a good scoring chance. So there's two mistakes right away, and I'm not sure if there's another one or not, but after that was when Noel cracked the whip.
I support Noel in sitting him down.
That's not the issue.
No, it's not the issue at all. No. I mean, or if anybody was trying to make that the issue, which I don't think anybody was. It doesn't matter who you are. If you're not following your assignments, there can't be a double standard. Kane has to be, the captain of this team.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Why not?
Ilya Kovalchuk, I mean, he lollygags back all the time. But he's so good at scoring goals that there is a double standard.
Kovalchuk is terrible defensively.
I know. And Kane isn't terrible defensively. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, you know, there's two schools of thought. You treat everybody the same, like John Tortorella does.
Yeah.
Or you treat everybody differently based on who they are and what they can do for you.
Evander Kane is not...
Is there a right way and a wrong way?
Another guy that's like that too, Richie, is Ovechkin. He definitely gets some leeway.
If you can score, you get leeway. And I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying
Kovalchuk and Ovechkin have done more in the NHL to deserve to be to earn that leeway than Evander Kane has.
You're right.
When Evander Kane scores his first 40 goal season and then does it for
he's better defensively than both of them, though,
which is fine. Which I'm not, and that's good. I'm glad that he's better defensively. But if he's not, if the coach has an expectation, and Evander Kane knows what the expectation is of him, and the expectation is up here
now,
and you're only delivering down here, then you deserve to be
Evander
sat
Kane's
down.
From Evander Kane's perspective, he's looking at it probably like, yeah, maybe I'm a young player. But I'm probably the best player on the team. Hold on. I'm probably the best player on the team. Andrew Ladd is turning the puck over
far too often. Andrew Ladd's had a terrible
year. And taking poor penalties, especially in the offensive zone. And he is getting promoted to the top line. So that's the double standard. So the coaches walk a fine line all the time between what is right or wrong and what kind of rules they put in place. Because if he is treating everybody the same, then Andrew Ladd would have been benched by now. So he's really not treating everybody the same.
Andrew Ladd has had a very poor season from my perspective. But if Evander Kane, like you just said, is good defensively, and he's been
not bad. I mean, he's not the best defensive player,
but he's been relatively responsible, right? So before you even let the bad habits even creep in a little bit, you nip him in the butt immediately, and if it means you sit him down for a bit, boom, Kane knows that he's not going to be. He can't get away with the lollygagging. That's the coach's expectation, regardless of how good he is on the offensive side. He doesn't have to be the best defensive player on the squad, but the coach is demanding this level of defense. And when you're below it, you're going to be sat down, and that's the standard he's creating.
But I think it's a double standard because it's not – he's not – you know, you treat everybody the same. He's not treating everybody the same. And I'm not saying he should treat everybody the same,
right.
But he's not.
Well, I agree. I agree with you that he's not, and I would have no problem with if he had sat down Andrew Ladd a number of games ago. I don't know for sure, but it seems like it's been about four or five consecutive games now that Andrew Ladd has taken a foolish offensive zone penalty.
Drew, and everyone's seen that. I mean, yeah, you're right. And he's taken a lot of minor penalties, and he's not happy, and he's frustrated, and he hasn't played the way he's wanted to play. But I think there's a philosophical problem there, and Claude Noel is trying to get the best out of Evander Kane. And Drew, you mentioned that there's expectations for Evander Kane, and there's expectations for himself. He's told the media that he wants to be an elite player, and he has that ability.
Who? No, he doesn't.
Evander Kane.
No, he doesn't. Oh, Evander Kane does. Yeah.
Yeah, Evander Kane. It's unquestionable. He's the most talented guy on the team, and he was a high draft pick.
For sure.
And you know, at one point he was on pace for a 50 goal season, and now he's gone, I believe, six games without a goal, and he's struggling. And you know, Claude Noel has decided to make different standards and you'd play him less. And this goes back to what Richie said, and Richie was the first person to say this, and I'll give him credit for it. Evander Kane's got to play more. And 18 minutes a game is not enough.
Absolutely, he needs to play more. He's their best. He's the only player on that team who creates any offense. I don't have any
doubt. I wouldn't go that far. On a consistent basis, maybe, but not at all.
Well, I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, but they do it together.
And little, but yeah, but Wheeler, I'll put it to you this way. I mean, what was Wheeler doing without Kane?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Wheeler's offense is a function of playing with Kane. I mean, they tried putting Ladd, Little, and Wheeler back together last game.
Why, by the way?
Well, let's talk about that. The game started last game. You know, the lines were Ladd, Little, and Wheeler, which is what it was at the end of last year in Atlanta.
And the beginning of this year.
And the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
And at the end of last year in Atlanta, they had a lot of chemistry, and they did some good things.
Well, yeah. Yep.
This year, they started off that way, and they did nothing.
Nothing.
For the first couple weeks of the year, they did nothing.
Brutal.
Then they mixed it up, and they went. So your question really does boil down to, and I'll try and answer this. I don't think you can. Why do you break up Kane, Little, and Wheeler?
I don't get it. I don't know.
Do you do it? Are they doing it to maybe get Kane and Burmistrov so they can get Burmistrov going?
Maybe, Drew, but if you have a line that's working well, try and work the other guys around. Don't break up the line. It's the only line that's driving you right now.
Right.
And especially if you're in a playoff race and you're telling people you're in a playoff race and you wanna keep competing, you have to leave your best line and your best players together.
And you know what, Richie, there's something to be said for where this team's going. We're still 6 weeks, 7 weeks, whatever it is exactly before the trade deadline. And we're going to start to see decisions made. Paul Postma was called up, and there's going to be. I'm not saying let's not overstate what that means, but I mean, depending on what happens, there's going to be different moves made, and there's certain players that won't be here next year and aren't part of the, let's say, the 5-year plan, right? Sure. And Evander Kane is part of that 5-year plan, so he's got to be playing more.
Is he though?
He's got to be.
I don't know if he is.
Well,
I mean, he's part of the plan, or what he's going to get them is part of the plan.
Well, it's either that or trade him, because he's an RFA coming.
Well, yeah. I mean, fine. I mean, obviously you can trade anybody at any time. So, but I mean, right now you wouldn't expect that they're playing with the mentality but that they're going to be trading him. He's the best player on their team.
Assuming that he is part of the
plan. Do we also have to talk about, as he quickly talked about the fact that he is an RFA and, you know, how he sees Noel treating him? Does he see it as a development process, or does he see it as being singled out? And if so, will he be more hesitant to resign?
But right, I'm also curious as who's in his ear.
These are all questions. A lot of time we don't know the answer to.
But Richie,
right?
Yeah. like Zach Bogosian and all that. Yeah. What are his options? He can't.
No, that's true.
So that's the problem.
Leverage with the team.
That's the problem.
Entry level.
I have to say something too because I do think Claude Noel, and we gave him grades, but regardless of the grades, just generally speaking, I think that he's done a very good job as coach. I do think that a lot of responsibility does have to fall on Evander Kane, because I do think that a lot of things that are going wrong are his immaturity, and I think that he's going through spurts, six games here, seven games earlier on in the season. I think that he's also there's more to be desired from Evander Kane. I think he needs to self motivate.
I don't think so. You know,
I think his passing has improved lately. I disagree.
Other teams are out there scouting the Jets, and you don't think that they're scouting the Jets and they're saying, well, you know, we shut down Evander. The only guy we have to worry about,
right.
The only guy we have to game plan for is Evander Kane. Shut down Evander Kane, and lo and behold,
we'll take our chances.
Yeah, and then if Kyle Wellwood beats you,
you didn't deserve to win anyway.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so, you know, they're just game planning for Evander Kane, which tells you all you need to know about how talented he is.
That's right.
He's the best player on the team.
Yeah.
Now, it's also a lot easier to game plan against Evander Kane when Bufflin's on the shelf and Bogosian to a lesser extent. But Bufflin's offense, take that out of the lineup as it's been for the last eight games. You've got one guy who can create on his own. I like Brian Little and I like Blake Wheeler, but they're not doing it without Evander Kane for the most part. So when you got a team like San Jose, who's got Douglas Murray and Brent Burns, and guys who can, you know, really take Evander Kane out of the game, the Jets are left with a lot of middling pieces that just don't put it together.
Yep, and that's why you'll see if it continues the way it is.
Well, today, let's sort of transition it back to against New Jersey. New Jersey doesn't have that same caliber of defense as San Jose did.
Yep.
So the Jets might be able to, they can take Evander Kane. They're going to definitely game plan to take Evander Kane out of the, not let him beat you.
Yep. They didn't, the first time around, last time against New Jersey, in New Jersey, they weren't matching up really too much. They were kind of playing the talent.
That was the first game against New Jersey. They played, and then since then, the first game against New Jersey, Jersey was up 2-0 with 10 minutes to go in the third period, and the Jets came back to steal that one point.
Jersey was just playing their top two defense pairings against the top two Jets lines and kind of letting it go. So what's interesting to see what they'll do today, because the Jets really don't have two lines now. They've really had trouble scoring, and the second, I think yesterday at practice, they had Ladd, Little, Wheeler back together. Kane, Little, Wheeler back together.
Which is good, but they also had...
We went to that at the end of the game.
They also had Ladd, Antropov, and Wellwood back together, which I don't fully understand.
Yeah, neither do I.
Yeah. I mean, when that line was together...
Initial success.
How much initial success did it really have?
Nobody was
talking about it because Kane, Little, and Wheeler were going so well that the second, third, fourth pairing lines just didn't matter.
Question is also with Bermistrov now. Bermistrov played arguably his worst game of the year on Thursday. What are you going
to
do with him?
Well, you have to put him into a position to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And putting him on with Fair and with whoever and Mietinen is not the best situation for him on the fourth line. Put him with Antropov.
See, I think Antropov, because I think Antropov is playing hurt. He's got one goal in his last 17 games. He's not that bad. I mean, let's be real here. I know he's not great. Yep. But he's not that bad.
He's one of the best Jets players in the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, and I think he's playing hurt. But even so, playing Bermistrov with Antropov, I agree, Drew, for a prolonged period of time, let him see what they got here, because nothing else is really working.
That's just it. I mean, put him there consistently and let him go for a little bit. We've gone way over. We got to hit a quick break, and then we got to come back again and then another quick break. So lots more to come. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet
Jeremy
Buick.
Rutherford.
Exactly, Jeremy Rutherford in a couple more minutes. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.